as my text, a book called The Tour. It's something that I used when I taught this in school, and I found it to be very, very easy to follow and very successful. Let me give you a little information about this. First of all, the author of The Tour was a man named Rabbi Jacob ben Asher. He was a 13th century Talmudic authority. Now, The Tour was the earliest major compiler of Torah law after Maimonides. And what he did was he took the text of the Torah, the prophets, and the Talmud, and later scholars such as Maimonides and the Jewish philosopher Sadr Gaon, and he demonstrated through them the Torah laws. Now, one of the reasons why I chose to do charity with you today was because the institution of charity is one which predated the actual giving of the Torah at Sinai, and it was very prevalent amongst the B'nai Noach. The first time we see charity being given in the Torah is in the story with Abraham and Melchizedek. In Genesis 14:20, we find that that when they met, Abraham said to him, "And blessed be the Most High God, who has delivered thy enemies into thy hand." And he gave him a tithe of everything. So Abraham gave a tithe of everything that he had to Melchizedek. And then later on in Genesis 28:22, we find the story of Jacob. After he had fled from Esau, he fell asleep and he had a dream. And in the dream, God had promised to protect him. And when he awoke, he said to Jacob said to God, "And of all thou shalt give me, I will surely give the one-tenth to thee." And so I thought that if you wanted to know, is this relevant, is this a relevant law to the B'nai Noach, my answer is definitely so, since it was in the Bible and it was done before the giving of the Torah at Sinai. But I would like to share with you the biblical passages that deal with charity. And charity is expressed both as a positive commandment and as a negative commandment. Both of them are found in Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15:8 is the positive commandment. "Thou shalt open thy hand wide to him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient for his need in that which he lacks." And then in 15:7 in Deuteronomy, it talks about the negative commandment. "If there be among you a poor man, one of thy brethren, within any of thy gates, in thy land, which the Lord thy God gives thee, thou shalt not harden thy heart, and not shut thy hand from thy poor brother." Now, I think it's kind of interesting to look into the idea of the fact that charity was given both as a positive commandment and as a negative commandment. And I guess it would be appropriate for us to ask, why is it that the Torah saw fit to express it both in a positive and a negative way? And I think that the answer probably is that what the Torah is trying to teach us is that when one gives charity, one is doing a positive action. He's helping another person, he's helping a poor person, and at the same time there's a benefit to the individual. He's able to do something which will enable him to perfect himself. But if you don't give charity, then you not only fail to do a good deed, but it is considered as if you did a bad deed. In other words, it's not only a virtue to give charity, but if you abstain from giving charity, that is an evil. And so in the giving of charity, there really is no in-between state. Either one gives, and that is a good deed, something good to do, or one does not give, and that is evil. I guess what you could say this shows us is that charity is really a necessary part of man's perfection. And a person can't really look at charity as an optional virtue. It is something that you must do. The Torah continues and mentions that a person who refuses to give charity, or a person that doesn't give charity, is called Belial. Now the English translation for the word Belial means wicked. And he goes on to say that a person who does not give charity is considered wicked, and he is considered as if he were an idol worshiper. Now, it's really difficult for me to understand that a person who doesn't give charity is considered to be on a par with one who worships idols. I mean, this is a mitzvah, it is a commandment, and yet it seems to imply that if one were not to give charity, one would be considered to be one who was an idol worshiper. Now, it's interesting to note that the Torah uses the word in Hebrew in two different parts of the Bible. Once it is used to describe a person who does not give charity, and once again it is used to describe a person who is an idol worshiper. And so, if the Torah uses the word twice, once for an idol worshiper and once for a person that does not give charity, then we really need to see what is the common denominator between a person who doesn't give charity and a person who's an idol worshiper. It really would, on the surface, appear to be two totally different things. But there is a common denominator, and the common denominator is simply this, that just like the person who worships idols, in essence, is abandoning God, and he is placing his security in his own mystical practices, so too, the person who refuses to give charity is also abandoning God. He's abandoning God's righteousness, and he's abandoning God's promise to him that if he gives charity, he will be blessed. And what does he do? He places his faith and his security in his own miserly practices. He wants to secure himself from poverty, and he uses all kinds of protective devices, mainly not giving the money. And so when a person does not give charity, what he really is in a state of denying God. He's built up his own security system, and he bases his security not on God's reality, but on his own selfish protective measures. That anyone who is diligent and anyone who is careful in the giving of charity, make sure that he follows this mitzvah with dedication and seriously gives to whomever he can, tells us that this person is considered to be a follower of Abraham. And we know that Abraham was the father of all those people who follow the ways of the Torah. Of course, this would include the Ben Noach as well. The Torah teaches us that it says about Abraham that I have made you a father of the multitude of nations. Now, what was so unique about Abraham was that he was the first man who came to recognize God on his own. It was through his investigations and through his searching and his probing that he found God. Now, this teaches us that a person who doesn't give charity really is a person that doesn't recognize God, because anyone who would recognize God must be aware of God's kindness. Now, this is something that should inspire us. And when we recognize God's ways, we want to emulate them. And God, being a God of kindness, teaches us that we must be kind and we must be charitable to all mankind. In Isaiah 54:14, we find another statement about charity. The statement is as follows. It says, with charity shalt thou establish me. Now we find that charity is not just the characteristic of an individual. We're not just asking an individual to give charity, but we're now explaining that the government, the kingdom of Israel, must be established through charity. That really and truly, the people, if the people are charitable, if they have the characteristics of charity, then the government will take on the very same characteristics as well. It will take on the characteristics of the people in their society. That means that if every person were to live by the letter of the law, that if every person were to be concerned with true justice, then that society could not exist. What we need to do is to go beyond justice. We must be willing to be generous to each other and not to care if somebody got a little bit more from them. You know, we're always so busy worrying about what we deserve, and it's just so hard to go out of our way and give a little bit extra to a person. But, you know, a person that's charitable is a giving person, and he's a person that's just not so concerned with seeking precise justice for himself, but he really is interested in the happiness and the feeling of others. He's happy even if others get a little bit more than strict justice dictates. You might say that charity is not just a performance of a mitzvah, but it is the characteristic of a person. And only those people with that type of characteristic can really create and establish a viable government. Look, the government in the United States is really an incredible government. It's true, we pay a lot of taxes and we complain about that, but we see that it has concern and it cares. Our troops are all over the world bringing food and hospital supplies and medication and clothing. We don't worry that that we've done already as much as we can. We want to do more. We continue to do more. Our kindness is reflected in the care that our government gives to people all over the world. And you give. The tour continues on now with a statement from Isaiah 1:27. The statement is as follows: Zion shall be redeemed with judgment, and those who return to her with charity. Now we find not only does a person have to give charity, and not only does the government of the Jews have to be a charitable one, but now we seem to find that our redemption will depend on our giving of charity. Now, what is it that is so important about our giving charity that it will appear that with our giving it, redemption will be brought about? Well, I think that, first of all, my first response would be that when one gives charity, one is showing that their security system is in God, and that it is only a nation who believes that God is the source of all good and the source of everything that they need will be redeemed with the giving of charity. Because if the nation were to say, well, it's the military, it's the strategy, I'm going to sit down and plan out the attack, and we certainly are going to win, and we certainly are going to be victorious and get the land back again once more, that nation, God will not help. It is only the nation that understands that we must rely totally on God, that God will redeem. And this redemption will be for the Jew and for all humanity as well. I think another idea that we might investigate is that even though God would offer man his redemption, a person who is not one that is charitable, a person that is a selfish person, a person that cannot give to others, is not going to be a person that will join in the redemption. Because in order for you to be redeemed, the person has to be able to relate to something other than his own self. The person who can't give charity and the person who values only their self and only worries about themselves and cannot share and cannot give, that person cannot play a role in the redemption of the Jews or the redemption of the world, which involves not just worrying about yourself, but you must be concerned with your fellow human being as well. The non-charitable person is really a person that's restricted totally to themselves. And to be a part of redemption, you must be able to be truly concerned with others, because that is the mark of the truly charitable person. Now, the tour goes on next to tell us that the giving of charity is even greater than the bringing of sacrifices. Now, that's a difficult one to understand, because the giving of sacrifices was really a very important aspect in the daily life of the Jew. So, first, let's ask, why did someone bring a sacrifice? And the reason that people brought sacrifices was either A, because they wanted to ask God for forgiveness for their sins, or B, in order to demonstrate that everything belonged to God, they brought something to the temple. They brought a donation or a sacrifice. Now, we know that Cain and Abel brought sacrifices, and they were not sinners, but they wanted to show that everything belonged to God, and they wanted to share with God by bringing a sacrifice. And we also know that Noah brought sacrifices for the very same reason. Now, what is it about charity that the giving of charity actually takes care? If we say that charity is greater than the bringing of sacrifices, then we have to actually say that in giving charity, one can actually accomplish more. And if you look at the ideas of giving charity, well, it's easy for us to understand that when a person gives charity, what he's really demonstrating is that everything that he has, the money that he has, really belongs to God. And it's really has a greater effect than a sacrifice, because he uses this money to help another of God's creatures. And charity also brings about forgiveness from a sin. Because what is sin? Sin has as its source the turning away from God. person turns away from God, there's no recognition that God is his sovereign, God is his master, God is the king of the universe. But when one gives charity, what one is really saying is that everything is God's. It comes back to the recognition of God, and therefore we can understand why giving of charity is even greater than the bringing of sacrifices. But at this point, I really would like to make it clear that the philosophy of the Torah is that in order to have a performance, one must translate his ideals into action. And a person can say, well, I love my fellow man, I love God, but this is only in ideas. But I just don't give. I mean, the fact that I don't give doesn't mean that I don't care about other people, and it doesn't mean that I don't love humanity. I just don't do the action. Well, I'm sorry, but this is not acceptable. One's actions must be expressive of one's beliefs. Now, finally, the Torah brings down a comforting and a reassuring thought. The statement is that a person can never, ever become poor because he gives charity. You know, most of us are really afraid to give, and what we really fear is that what we're giving is going to deny us our pleasures and our fun things in life. And so the Torah emphasizes this fact. Don't be afraid to give. Don't feel, well, I just have enough to get by, and I really, it bothers me that I can't give as much as I would like to, but what could I do? I need the money for myself. It's hard to give. Why is it hard to give? For one simple reason, because the person knows the more they give, the less they're going to have for themselves. And so the Torah tells us that a person who gives charity will not be affected. You can never become poor by giving charity. He continues on with a statement that was made by Rabbi Eliezer. Whoever does charity and justice is as if they fill the entire world with kindness, because it states in Psalms, he who loves charity and justice, the kindness of God fills the earth. This means that charity has a contagious quality, and if one does charity, then he inspires others to be generous and of noble character, and thus they infuse the entire world with the trait of charity. I'd like to go back, if I may, to the idea of a person not becoming poor by giving charity. I'd like to expand on this a little bit more. I'd like you to know that it's important for all of us to understand that the Torah doesn't want a person to be poor. And the Torah certainly doesn't consider poverty to be a virtue. We know that there are many religious orders where people take vows of poverty, where poverty is a virtue. This is not the case in our Torah. The Torah here is saying to a person that if you give charity, it will never make you poor. Well, how can the Torah guarantee this? How can we tell this to a person? How can we say this with assuredness? I would think that the answer would be that there really are two ways that a person can become poor. The first is, of course, if God decrees that this person should become poor. The other way that a person, the more obvious way that a person becomes poor, is when a person acts irrationally towards his money. Well, it's not hard to understand. A person goes out and spends above his means. A person needs to have something. He needs to be showy. He goes out of his way. He takes on a loan. He goes above his income. Or he gets caught up in the good deal. And he invests too much in something that he should have really given less money to. He should not have been taken in by somebody else. It might have been a good investment, certainly, but certain investments should really just be made with certain amounts of money. A person should not spend everything that he has, put everything into one investment. So if a person goes overboard in the outlay of money, well, then they certainly chance becoming poor. And the Torah here is telling us that none of these two ways are going to be the cause, are going to be responsible for poverty, for poverty operating in the case of a person giving charity. The first reason, God making you poor, would not work when you're charitable. God will not allow a person who gives charity to be the cause of his poverty. And, of course, the second reason that a person becomes poor is because they act so unwisely with their money. Well, if a person were to give charity, giving charity makes a person rational about his money. And it takes away this obsessiveness about money. And it gives him the proper perspective and the proper attitude towards his money, so that his giving charity will never be the cause of his poverty. You know, there was an economist who always would say that behind every bankruptcy, there was an emotion. Charity protects the person from having these very same emotions. The tour continues on and tells us that everyone who takes pity on a poor person, God will take pity on them. And just like a person asks God constantly, people are constantly asking God to help them in their financial matters, to help them land a good job, to help them win the lottery, to help them, you know, acquire more wealth. And just like we stand and we ask God in our prayers for his help, and we hope that he will answer us, so we know that it is our obligation to help another person. A person should think that just like he asks God for his need, so too he has to listen to the needs and the requests of the poor. Now, this really comes under the laws of emulating God's ways. And a person must try as much as he's possible and so far as he is possible to be godly, to function in line with the divine element in his soul. And through this divine element, man then can see his fellow man in another light. He can look at him objectively as a creature with needs. And that should move him to help the person, just as the Creator in his infinite kindness sustains every one of us, so that even though a person can't be like God, because of course God is totally different than his creatures, nevertheless, in one sense, he can approach God by acting on a different level, on a higher plane, by looking and trying to find people that need your help and listening to them and doing as much as you possibly can. All right? Now, it really should also be realized that it is very hypocritical to ask God for your needs if you're not going to be willing to help other people. Wherever a person is able to, he must help another individual. So a person who does not give charity and then goes and prays to God for his needs is really being hypocritical. In Exodus 22, it states that God is close in hearing the cries of the poor, and it will be when he cries to me that I will hear him, because I am kind. Now, this is very interesting, because you think about it, it shows us that God is close to the needy and to the poor. And when they approach us, if we turn away from them, then we should realize that we're turning away from someone who is close to God. All right? Now, the tour goes into the psychology of a person who does not give charity. Why would a person not give charity? The tour explains that when a person doesn't give charity, it's really not a human characteristic to not to answer the needs of your fellow man. How can a person be cold? How can a person be indifferent? And how can he turn away from the needs of another human being? All right.
I think it's really quite simple to understand why a person just does not willingly give to another person, especially a person of means. A person that's wealthy, a person that has a lot of money, views his money as his security. Gives him a great sense of ego. And in truth, people like this really think that they're really above the common man. They really believe that they're different. They can't identify with a person that's poor. Of course, they want to think of themselves as charitable, and they want to let other people know that they do give and they are concerned. But reality is that they do live in their own world, surrounded by their own luxuries. And this lifestyle really separates them. Their wealth becomes their security. And it's just impossible for them to understand what it is to be a person who does not have. But the Torah mentions to us that a person really is not immune to poverty. I'm sure all of you have heard the expression of the wheel of fortune. The wheel of fortune turns. We look at money and we describe money as a wheel that moves, a wheel that turns, a wheel that rolls from one person to another. A person should know that perhaps you have money, and perhaps you have this sense of security that the money gives you, but perhaps your son is not as wise a businessman. Perhaps your son is not as clever in keeping the family fortune. Perhaps your son will lose it, and your son will become poor. So a person cannot look at money and view money as his sense of security, because you cannot hold on to money forever. There is no security in money. And so then the question would be, well, how should you view money? And how should you act with money? What should the proper attitude be in regard to money? And the easiest way to understand it is to view it as if it was something that someone gave to you with the instructions of using it wisely. Now, there's a story of Rabbeinu Yonah, who gave a parable, and he said, perhaps you would understand how to deal with money more wisely if you understood that there was a king. The king had vast amounts of money, and he appointed someone to be the treasurer over this vast vault. And he said to him, I'm putting you in charge. My instructions to you are, take whatever it is that you need for living. I want you to have luxurious life. I want you to have everything that you need. But then I want you to understand that when other people come and other people ask you for help, that you are to give them from the treasury for whatever it is that they need. Now, if you were to look at your own money in that way, and you would understand, I think, what charity is. You have money. The money is yours. How should you look at this money? How should you feel about this money? Use the money wisely. Live well. Have what you need. But then there is a point where you must be able to give and to share with others. And if you understand the ideas behind money, then I think you'll be a lot freer. You'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it wisely, and you won't worry. If you feel it's yours and you earned it and you can share, you're really never going to be happy with that money. And I explain it to the girls that I teach in a very simple way. When you go shopping with your mother, you want everything. And there isn't a price tag that's too high. And finally, you're frustrated when your mother says no. And she says to you, look, I'll make a deal with you. I'll buy you the dresses. You buy yourself the accessories. And you're walking around, you're 14, 15, 16, you're walking around with this little purse of money, your babysitting money that you earned, and suddenly you begin to look at these price tags and you understand what your mother's complaining about. The prices are too high. Why are they high? Because suddenly you have to take your money, you have to use your money to buy these things. And once it becomes your money, it's really much harder to give it up. And so we think, well, that's okay in a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old because her limited resources, and she doesn't really want to go and spend everything she has. But unfortunately, those ideas of the teenager really grow with us. And we always tend to think of that the money is ours, and we're limited, and we want to hold on to it, and we don't want to share it. And this idea comes straight into adulthood. But if you understand what money really is, and you can detach yourselves from this fear of giving to others, then you will really be able to involve yourself in the mitzvah of charity. Now, in Malachi 3, we find that the Torah brings down a phrase that says, God says, bring all the tithes to the treasury, and let there be food in my house, meaning the temple. And please test me with this, says the God of hosts. If I will not open up for you the windows of heaven, and I will pour upon you a blessing that is more than enough. And sages say that a person is never, you're never allowed to test God. The only time that you are permitted to test God, and the only area that you're permitted to test God in, is in this one area. And the quote is from the prophets, and it states, test me please with this, meaning that there is a promise here from God. The promise is that there is a benefit to a person giving charity, that you will miss nothing when you give charity. And not only will you miss nothing, but you will gain wealth and you will gain honor. Those are the benefits that one will achieve by giving charity. And one who gives can expect to get back even more. A person can give charity and expect from God that he returned to him tenfold of what he gave. Now that seems like a good rate of return, and the question that we would naturally have to ask is, do you really mean this? Is this really true? Does it mean that anyone can give $10,000 for charity and then they can expect $100,000 in return. I think people would like those odds. Those sound like good odds. It doesn't seem that it's rational. It doesn't seem to... Look carefully at what the prophets are saying. God says to you, I will open up for you the windows of heaven and pour upon you a blessing that is more than enough. And I'm emphasizing the words more than enough. So there's one qualification for this experiment. Do you really want to know how to get this money back in return? This is that the person who gives the charity has to be one who does not have an endless desire for money. Because a person who has an endless desire for money, this formula will not work for him. If, on the other hand, he's an individual who has a realistic view towards money, and he wants the money for the real reasons. He wants the money to support his family. He wants the money so that he can take care of his kids. He can have a nice home to live in. And he wants the money so that he can share with others and he can give charity. And he wants the money so that his standard of living makes it possible for him to spend time studying. Then such a person, if they are in need and they give charity, this is the person that God will pay tenfold. And this tour now goes on to actually tell us of two events that occurred, one which occurred in the prophets and one which occurred in the Bible, to describe charitable acts and uncharitable acts. In the first case, the story takes place in Kings 1:17. We find that the prophet Elijah is on the run. He's running away. He has no food. He has no water. He's starving. And God sends him to a woman who lived in the city of Zarephath. And he gets there. He's really on the verge of starvation. And he says to her, could you give me some water? And she says, yes, of course. Here's a glass of water. And he finishes the water and he says to her, do you have any meal? Can you make something for me? And she looks at him and she says, look, I have just enough meal flour left for myself and for my son. When I'm finished making this last batch of meal cakes, there will be nothing left, and then we're just going to die. That's it. There's no food. There's a famine. And he said to her, look, make the meal cakes, but share them with me. Give one to me. And I'm telling you that if you share this with me, there will be a blessing for you. And sure enough, she listened to him. She gave him the meal cake. And the end of the story is, of course, that this meal that she used remained. There was an endless supply of it, and it carried her through the famine. So here, because of her charitable act, she was blessed, and she and her son survived this horrible event. The Torah speaks about the nation of Ammon and Moab, and he describes them as a nation that the Jews should really distance themselves from because they displayed uncharitable characteristics. When the Jews had asked them simply for food and water as they were traveling through the land, this was denied to them because these people were uncharitable. And they were not willing to share, to give, even for a price. They simply refused. And so the Torah tells us or describes them as a nation, and it advises us not to intermarry with them and to keep our distance from people of this nature. I think this would be a good way of describing through these two stories the idea of charity, which an individual is responsible for giving, and the idea of the charitable nation, the charitable government, which we spoke of before. The Torah concludes this chapter with a statement in which he says that when a person performs the commandment, the mitzvah of charity, he must do it very, very carefully. The reason that he emphasizes the words very, very is because mitzvahs must be done with care. You must learn the laws. It isn't really enough to think of yourself as a charitable person, but in order to do the commandments, you must understand the reasons behind them, which is the philosophy of the mitzvah, and then you must go on to the practical applications. It's necessary for you to understand who's required to give, and how much you're required to give, and in what manner you're required to give. You are required to learn the laws in order to do the mitzvahs correctly. I think the first question that we would like to have answered is, who's obligated to give charity? And the answer really is everyone is obligated to give charity. We really don't want to deny anyone this opportunity at perfection, and therefore everyone, even I would say a child who reaches teens and is earning money babysitting, should start to understand that it's necessary to give a percentage from their income. And even a poor person, a person who's dependent on his income from charitable sources, even a poor person must give. Certainly he's not required to give a large percentage, because that would be ridiculous. It would mean that we'd have to give him more so that he could give more. But a poor person must give a very small amount at least once a year. And the reason being is that obviously we want him to understand what it means to be able to give, and give him an opportunity at perfecting himself. Now, the standard for giving, the required amounts for giving charity, would be that a person has to give at least 10%, and he really should not, he's not allowed to exceed 20% of his income, unless he's exceedingly wealthy, and giving more will not in any way cut into his living and his lifestyle. But that's only someone who's very wealthy. Otherwise, the range is between 10 and 20%. You might ask, well, why is the maximum 20%? Why shouldn't you just give as much as you can? Why shouldn't you give more than you can? Why shouldn't you just keep giving as long as you can afford it? And the answer is that the Torah really recognizes that it's human nature to want to live in a certain standard of living, certain lifestyle, to have a certain ease and comfort in your life. And they don't want you to... they don't want a person to jeopardize this lifestyle and their own financial security in order to help other people. There would be no benefit to the society if the person that gives charity gives in excess and then endangers his own status, and then he becomes poor himself. So the Torah places this maximum of 20% on charities, unless, as I said, it would not affect his lifestyle if he were a very, very wealthy person. All right. Now, the 10% minimum and the 20% maximum works as follows, that the person would give that percentage on what he has earned during that year. If you hit the lottery, hit the jackpot, then you would be required to give 10% from that too. And so that would be on the principal, on that which you have earned. If you had sold your house, for example, and you that was considered part of your income, and you put the money away, then the following year, of course, you would only have to give it on the interest that that would accrue, because that would be considered your income. All right. And of course, this is 10 or 20% after taxes. And taxes, by the way, are Torah obligation. The Torah obligates you to give taxes to the country in which you live. And we would really consider not giving taxes as one who is literally stealing from the government. All right. Now, we also should know that charity, the phrase charity begins at home, literally means that according to law, a person is supposed to first give to members of his family, and to his friends, to the people that live in his own town, and then finally to people outside of your community. Now, there are laws governing how a person is supposed to give charity to another person. You know, most of the time we especially in New York, you walk down the streets, there's homeless people there. They're all over. You're uncomfortable. They're walking around. You don't know who to give and how much to give. In New York, on Sundays, they come knocking at your door and asking for charity. And it's just how one gives is also dictated in terms of the laws of charity. First of all, this is interesting. The poor person must have personal access to the wealthy person. If a person were to come and to ask a wealthy person for a donation, it would not be enough for you to have this person deal with your secretary. You must give him an opportunity to speak to you directly. All right? The Torah really recognizes that there's a deep psychology in giving charity. When you give it, how you give it, this is also, these things are really very important. All right? You must really be able to give charity with a happy disposition. You must be kind, you must be gracious, you must be able to share with this person his feelings and understand and have compassion towards the plight of the poor, and try to speak to them encouragingly. Now, if a person doesn't act in the above manner, then the Torah tells us that he loses the benefit of his charity. Now, it's hard to understand. You say, well, I gave it, and that's the law. I mean, why do I have to do any more? But if you degrade this poor person and you're not sympathetic to him, then we do say that you lose the benefit of your charity, because the Torah recognizes that poverty is as much a psychological deficit as it is a financial deficit, and you must be careful to pick up the spirit of the poor person. Now, it does happen sometimes you just don't have any money on you, you have no change, you've given away your last money. Well, what can you do? Is there anything that you can do? If a person cannot give money himself, then it is even a greater mitzvah to go to somebody else and ask that other person to give the poor person money. Now, that's an interesting idea. Why is it even greater? Why is the mitzvah even greater when you go to someone else and you ask them to give this poor person? Because really what you're doing is you're asking someone else to give money to this poor person, and in a sense you're degrading yourself for another person. You're humbling yourself for someone else, and that's even that's more difficult sometimes than giving from your own pocket. In Leviticus 25:35, the Torah says that if your brother becomes impoverished and his means fail with you, then you shall strengthen him, and though he be a proselyte or a ger toshev, and he shall live with you. Now the Torah speaks in psychological terms. When you give him charity, what you're really doing is you are strengthening him. It says that he should live with you. A poor person is not considered to be really living. A poor person is in a state of depression. A poor person, if he's a man, does not feel quite as manly if he cannot provide his family with their needs and their necessities. And many times the depression sets in. It takes the person away from being able to do the mitzvah. So the Torah considers the poor man as one who is psychologically depleted. He feels his dignity has been impaired. So you're obligated to give him charity in a way that just restores his dignity. That poverty takes a person away from the proper frame of mind through which he can relate to God, and the proper frame of mind for his own mental health. And it's interesting to note that this very verse that I mentioned before about strengthening your brother states that the Jew is obligated to give charity to the needy ben Noach, who abides by the seven laws of Noah, who is not an idolater, and whom we call a ger toshav. Yet another aspect of charity is one that I think probably makes a different type of demand upon you, and that is that you must be able to restore, by giving charity, must be able to restore the person to the standard of living to which he has been accustomed. So if they had a high standard of living, you're actually obligated to supply them with everything that they had in their lifestyle. Now, you may have to give the charitable person enough to live on a higher standard of living than you might be living on. And that's really very difficult to do. The Torah mentions this specifically in Deuteronomy 15:8. Open up your hand to him and give him according to his need. Again, this is based on the fact that the Torah recognizes the psychological aspect of poverty as well as the financial. And it should be understood, of course, that there are priorities, that a person who's lacking in their basic needs comes before a person who has their basic needs but is lacking in their lifestyle. Again, a part of the psychological fact that the Torah emphasizes is don't close your hand. In Deuteronomy 15:7, even if you can't afford the full amount, give him something, because it shows him that you are concerned about him and you are responsive to his needs. I think in the blessing that Jacob gave to his son Judah, there is an interesting statement, and it mentions the fact that white teeth are better than milk. And I really like the connotation, because it means that when you think about milk, milk represents the perfect food. And yet this would imply that a smile given to a person can do more than even if you gave him the most perfect food. Why? Because man is a psychological being, and his happiness depends on his psychological well-being. So when you're giving, remember, it's hard to give, but if you do it graciously and you give it with a smile, you are doing so much for this person. And that's really what the whole idea of charity is. It's an interesting custom that many people follow really even today, and that is giving charity before one prays. I think that the idea would be very much that when one prays, one is recognizing God. There's recognition of God in our prayers. And certainly when one is giving charity, one must recognize that everything that one has is due to God's benevolence. And so in Psalms it says, with righteousness I will see thy face. When a person gives charity, it has both an emotional, it sets his mind, when a person gives charity, it aligns both his emotions and his mind in a way that he has the proper attitude to approach God. The eight steps of charity, as Maimonides has organized them and arranged them. Okay? Step number one, the highest form of giving charity, is to actually help a person so that he would not need to have charity in the future. Help him in business, help him to get a job, help him by giving him a loan, help him by setting up a business of his own. Really what you want to do is to prevent this person from needing charity in the future. And it is derived from the verse, you shall strengthen him. Strengthening means to fortify him from poverty. So this would be the highest level, really helping a person not remain in a state of poverty, but regain his independence. In level number two, we have a person gives charity, but he doesn't know who he is giving charity to. He does not know who the recipient is going to be. And the poor person doesn't know who he has received this money from. He doesn't know who his benefactor is. Now, this is a high level of giving charity because the one who gives doesn't have the ego satisfaction that he gave. And the one who receives doesn't have to feel indebted to anyone. This is really the way it was done in the temple. They used to have a special place where the righteous would place their charity and the poor people would come and they would take it. I guess it would be similar to giving to a fund today or to a charitable organization. But you should really be very careful that when you give to these funds and these organizations, that unless you know who is dispersing this money, unless you know that the people that are in charge are reliable and they know how to disperse it properly, you might be better off taking care of it on your own. In level number three, the person knows to whom he is giving. But the recipient, the person who is getting, does not know from whom he is taking this money. So although the giver may have some kind of an ego satisfaction from giving, the recipient isn't humbled or beholden to anyone. The great scholars would go privately and they would place this money at the door of the poor people. And this is the proper way to do it, because if you're not in a situation where those who dispense it are reliable or don't know how to give it, this would be an appropriate way. In step number four, the poor person knows from whom he receives it, but the donor doesn't know to whom it is going to. And this is exemplified by some scholars who would take the money and they would tie it up and they would throw it over their shoulder. And then the poor people would come and they would pick it up. This too takes away from the humiliation of the poor, because they know that there is no person whom they have to face as being their donors. Step number five is face-to-face encounter. It's a situation where you see the person approaching you, you know exactly what it is that he wants, and you give it to him before he even asks. And so again, you are removing the humiliation, because it's really difficult to ask another person for help. In step number six, you're going to give this person, this previous person that approaches you, the proper amount, but only after he asks. In step number seven, you give as much as you can. It may be less than was asked for, but it's the manner in which he gives it. You give it in a friendly manner, in a supportive manner, and you show compassion. In step number eight, you neither give the proper amount, and you do not give it in the proper way. You give it grudgingly. Although this is still considered charity, it is lacking in the quantity and in the quality. But still in all, the person does have the mitzvah, although not as great as in the above seven levels. But God still considers it to be a charitable act. And in conclusion, I guess I would really just like to say that it's really important for a person to strive to give charity in the highest possible way. It really may not always be possible, but the mitzvah of charity lends itself to a variation of degree. So I hope that you enjoyed this, and I hope you will be on your way to be a charitable nation.